Welcome to Growth Uncut, a podcast that interviews different people from around the world to share their views on personal growth. We feel passionately about connecting communities and raising awareness around social justice, humanity and relationships. And today I am really privileged to be joined by Ralph Lepkowski. Hello, Ralph.
Hi, Sarah.
Hi. It's so great to have you on here. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, so it's great to be here too. Thank you for inviting me on. So, I've been in the prison service now for 16 years, joined on an intensive development scheme, so a fast-track scheme in 2004, started off at HMP Gartree, worked my way up through the grades, and I'm now in my second prison governor post, having previously governed at HMP Stafford for 2.5 years. I joined HMP Huell in June of this year, late June this year, so I've been at Huell for 6 months now. I live in Leicester. And I've been working in the West Midlands now for a fair while. But yeah, based in Leicester, family, wife, two small children, keep me very busy alongside the work. But yeah, so that's a brief summary of me.
Brilliant. And why did you join the prison service?
So actually, it was my dad's idea. So I wanted to teach. So I'd always wanted to be in public sector, public service, and thought that teaching was a good avenue. My degree was actually in law, but I decided lawyering was not for me. So I tried to teach, but because of my degree being law, I couldn't get on a PGCE course, sadly, at the time. So I looked around for sort of fast track options in the public sector, went for the Home Office. And while I was waiting for the results of the sort of final interview for the Home Office fast stream, my dad suggested, why don't you ever go at the prison service as well? He was a chaplain at HMP Ashwell, sadly now closed. And he sort of suggested, you know, you're a people person, Ralph. You like working with people. You've got a bit of energy and get up and go about you. Why don't you have a go at this? They've done this new fast track program and might be interesting. So I went for it. And yeah, there we go. I got through to the last stage, which was a 2-day interview at Newbold Revel. Very intense. Absolutely. Lots of role play and everything else. And unfortunately enough, got through as a small cohort of 18 or 19 people, most of whom are still in the service now and many of them in sort of senior positions across the service. So, yeah, that's how I joined. But, yeah, got my dad to thank for it, really. It's not something I would have thought of.
Mm. And what do you like about it? What do you like about working in the prison service?
I guess that's developed over time, really. Initially, to be honest, it was just the fact that it was something different, interesting, people focused, and there was really good career prospects. You know, I was quite ambitious. I wanted to progress. And so my initial motivation was nothing more complicated than that, really. But then as you get into it and develop and start to sort of get into the, I don't know, and anybody that's worked in prisons will probably empathise with this, as probably you will, Sarah, I should think. They kind of get under your skin a bit, and you start to realise that actually it's an incredibly rewarding role at whatever grade I've been at. There's an element of, there's a lot of camaraderie, so there's a sense of community and being part of something, whether that's good or bad or surviving or thriving, whatever that is, you're part of something that's a bit bigger than just you, which appealed to me, certainly. But also there's an opportunity to sort of see amazing things happen. So a lot of prison life is relatively mundane and can be quite, but then we get occasional flashes either of really difficult times. So managing incidents and people come together and deal with seemingly impossible problems, but that has a certain, you know, allure to some people. But for me, it wasn't really about the sort of the excitement of the sort of the incidents and the operational stuff. For me, it was always more about the sort of people and relationships, and it was about the sort of that ability to sort of talk to somebody and engage with somebody and listen and experience their world, and try and build a rapport and build a relationship with them, and then see the benefits of that start to happen. I've talked about this before. You know, I've worked in some really demanding operational environments, and I've only ever instigated use of force once. And that was at Glenparva to stop somebody getting a toilet wrapped around their head. So it really was needed. But that's the only time I've ever actually had to start that process. And I think that's because probably the bit of the job I enjoy most. is the talking bit, and I kind of love that. So I've always enjoyed taking the time to engage and listen and speak and all the rest of it. And we know sometimes we're dealing with really difficult situations, but generally the way through that is talking and listening in really simple terms.
And in terms of personal growth, what does personal growth mean to you?
So I'm quite reflective. So I sort of try and understand why I do the things I do and why I react to things in certain ways, because I think that helps make me better as a leader. If I understand myself better, understand what makes me tick and why I do the things I do, I guess, and what drives me, it helps me then to sort of be authentic in what I do and try and be really honest and just be who I am with the people that work for me. But I think having a good understanding of who you are is necessary if you're going to do that. So that's really important for me. So trying to keep having new experiences, keep trying different things, and then keep reflecting on how that's worked and how did that make me feel and how did other people react to that? And did I get the best out of that situation? Have I made the best of, you know, has that person benefited from that interaction or their time with me? And what could I do differently next time? And so it's that continuous learning bit, but also the bit for me is about taking risks. So I hate the idea of doing the same thing and expecting a different result. I think we do that a lot in the prison service. And if it doesn't work, why are we still doing it? And why aren't we doing something different? And so there's a bit there about, you know, having the courage to take some risks and do things differently, but always actually with an eye on, well, what's the evidence telling me? What is out there? You know, what have I experienced? What do I think works? And actually, well, that seemed to work really well. Well, I'm going to try that again or do more of that instead of doing this thing that I've patently seen doesn't work. So I think there's a lot in there, I know, but that's sort of where I'm at with growth. It's that being reflective, understanding who you are and why you do what you do and what drives you, but then also, you know, being not afraid to take risks and make those difficult decisions and do things differently. And then again, you come back to the bit where you're reflecting on, well, why did I do that? Did that actually work? You know, I wanted it to work, but I kind of like, I've got to be honest, did it really work? Or do I need to think of something different? And that keeps driving me and keeps me going and keeps me energized, trying different things to get the best results we can. Because you're dealing with human beings and there's no one size fits all in this job. It doesn't work like that for my staff or for the prisoners in Huel and wherever I've worked. You know, that they all need, everybody needs different things. So you've got to try different things in order to get that engagement and get that satisfaction and fulfillment that I get from seeing that happen. But you can't think that what you did with one guy is going to work necessarily for the next guy, because they may be in a very different place. So yeah. And that's what I love. That's what I enjoy doing, is watching that impact. I'm driven by impact, I guess, is what I'm saying. And so seeing that change happen is really important to me.
And you talk a little bit about your relationships. So I guess turning to those relationships, who would you say are your kind of biggest inspirations, and why are they your inspirations?
Yeah, so it's always a good question. I got asked this the other day on a coaching session, actually, and I had to really think about it. And I've forgotten what I said, which is a bit awkward. So there's a couple of people that I would start off actually with my dad. In many ways, he wasn't a perfect human being. None of us are, and he certainly had his moments, and we had an interesting relationship at times. But what he developed was a real sense of honesty, and he basically just decided he was going to be who he was and not apologize for that. This is who I am. This is what I'm all about. If you like that, brilliant. If you don't, that's absolutely fine as well. But I'm not going to change, because that's who I am, and I'm not going to pretend to not be that person. And as he got later on in his life, and that was then exaggerated even more when he was diagnosed with cancer. He died last year. And that became even more of a mantra for him, because he was like, well, I've not got time to waste on being something that I'm not. You know, I've got a limited amount of time left, and I'm going to live it as me. And I sort of looked at that and I thought, actually, you know, why not start that now? You know, don't need to get to that place. And I kind of realized I'd sort of done that, and my career kind of went a bit crazy probably 5 years ago, really, after quite a long time just sort of pootling around a steady level. That changed very rapidly. And I think a big catalyst for that was actually that recognition of, I just need to be who I am and get on with doing it. And if that works, then brilliant. If it doesn't, maybe I need to look at a different line of work. Mm. So that's a big inspiration for that. I think also another governor that I worked really closely with. So Phil Novis, who I hate saying it because his head will expand and it's big enough as it is. But he did actually really inspire me. Came into Leicester at a really difficult time, on the back of a really difficult inspection. Wasn't an experienced governor. He'd spent a bit of time at Gartree, but really was his first governor post. And he just came in, again, with a clarity of purpose in terms of what he wanted to do. But a bit like I talked earlier about sort of being able to reflect and being honest and open and authentic. He was never afraid to say when he was struggling. He didn't mind showing his vulnerabilities when things weren't good. He was, you know, a larger-than-life character in many ways when things were good, but also when things were difficult, he would say that, and he would have the courage to say, actually, I'm finding this really difficult, guys. I need some help. Mm-hmm. And I've always remembered that and thought, and also didn't, I think the best thing that Phil did for me was gave me my head to do the things that I thought were going to make a difference, just empowered me to get on and do, gave me the top cover that I needed to do the stuff that needed to happen, and built a sense of community and a sense of team spirit within Leicester that actually stood us in really good stead. And the results were, you know, improved across every HMIP metric at a time when everybody else was going into special measures and urgent notifications. Leicester actually improved from 3-2s and a 1 to 3-3s and a 2 against all the odds. And, you know, almost miraculous, I would say, to be honest. And that was a big part of it. You know, there's that bit there where I just look at that and I sort of think, actually, that's great, because he just did what he felt was the right thing. He had a simple method: do the right thing. We're all one team together. Get on and do. I'll back you up. I've got your back. Just do what you need to do to make this place better. And let's take some risks and take some chances and look outwards instead of inwards. And the partnership with De Montfort University grew from that. And that ethos came from that. Actually, let's just get on and do what works and try and do things differently. So that's one personal person, and then one sort of from a career perspective that have had quite a big impact on me and how I've worked subsequently, I think.
And looking at what you were saying about being authentic and also in some senses being vulnerable, I guess, how important do you feel that is for prison officers or prison staff generally?
Yeah, so from a leadership perspective, I think it's absolutely vital. I think there is a risk, particularly in a disciplined service, where we think that strong leadership is not ever showing that you're affected or you find something difficult, which is not humanity. You know, all of us have moments where, and if you're going to really connect with the people that you're trying to influence, they have to know that you're human. You can't be authentic if you're painting a picture that you're some sort of superhuman, never get stressed, never get flustered, everything's fine. You know, because that's not real life. I've never met a single person in the service who felt like that all the time. And if you're not feeling like that, then why not show your staff? Because it makes it okay for them to be feeling that too, because they will be. Mm-hmm. So that, I think that vulnerability is really important. And if you set that example for your staff, you know, they have to be able to empathize with people who've been through incredibly difficult times that, you know, and so to allow staff to kind of, you know, in an appropriate way and respecting the boundaries that do exist, you know, to build a proper relationship with somebody that suffered trauma or was going through a really difficult time, you know, again, for a member of staff to just give a little window into the fact that they can understand that and that actually they're finding things difficult as well, but we're kind of all in this together. And a seamless segue now into COVID. I think COVID did that. I think a lot of staff showed a human side that maybe prisoners hadn't seen. And I think in a lot of prisons that broke down barriers, because I think there was a sense from prisoners that like, oh, wow, OK, you're coming in even though COVID's happening and you've got families and there's a risk to that. And we respect that. Mm. And staff were like, oh, actually, and you guys, we're locking you up for 23 hours a day and you're not kicking off. You're not rioting. you're not going crazy. Actually, we respect that. And so there was a bit of mutual respect, but it came from a place of, right, this is awful. We're all in this together. It's crap out there. Prisoners could see how bad it was outside. They're watching the TV. They could see what the staff were dealing with out in the community. And all of a sudden it broke down a lot of barriers. And that comes from that position of vulnerability of saying, yeah, this is crap and I am scared and there's a pandemic going on and all I've got is a little face mask and a plastic apron and I'm trying to make this work. Mm. So that I think it's really important. I think that's an example of where that has happened. And I think that's the staff that I see that are the best staff I work with, certainly from an officer perspective, but at all levels are those staff who are able to make that connection by demonstrating that, you know, it's not a them and us, it's, you know, we're all in this together and we can work together and get through however difficult it gets. And that's when you see sort of that prison work at its absolute best, when those relationships form. But there has to be that vulnerability and honesty to make that connection.
Yeah. And I guess moving on in terms of, you know, COVID was certainly a massive challenge and continues to be a massive challenge, I think, across the prison service. But looking at your life and your experiences, what would you say has been your biggest challenge and what have you learned from it?
Oh, gosh. So there's a couple, really, actually. There's a couple. So, I think referring to my dad, the loss of my dad was massive. I hadn't realised how significant it was going to be until it happened, even though it went on for a long time. And it is a formative moment, I think, in your life, you know, in your 40s, parents getting older, lose a parent, you know, it does change your perspective on things, especially when you're a parent yourself. So that was a big moment. And I think it made me think more and more about what is it that I need from my life in order to feel fulfilled and make the impact that I want. Because I think, although in many ways, you know, Dad lived a great life, I think there were elements of regret there, I think, as well, things he hadn't done. And I thought, actually, I don't want to have any regrets. I'm going to give this the best shot I can. And, you know, and if you can, if, you know, and because you never know, do you? You never know when that's going to happen. He was a fit, healthy guy, you know, it should never have happened. And it did. And there were probably things he wanted to do that he hadn't done. And so although he had a good life, you know, actually there was a bit of inspiration there for me to say, right, I need to crack on and, you know, make that difference that I want to make, because you don't know when the chance, you don't know how long you're gonna have that chance for. Don't take it for granted. So there's a bit of that. And I think I had there was a really difficult time I had in my couple of really difficult times professionally, actually. Firstly, early on in my career, I sort of went to a prison that was, in my view, was not in many ways operating in the way that I thought the prison should run. And I found that quite difficult. I was very new in service, new line manager. There was a very entrenched culture that I found it very difficult to engage with and break into. And that was really hard. And I actually reflected on whether the job was for me at that point, because I thought, I don't know if I want to be part of this. This isn't who I am and this isn't what I signed up for. And again, I think there'll be lots of people in the service that will recognise that at times you think, flipping heck, do I really want to be part of this? Is this what I want to be? And so that was really difficult. And then also I went down to London for a couple of years and had an amazing experience in London and sort of had viewed that as a springboard. And subsequently, actually, it's turned out it has been a springboard, because that experience was massive for me. But coming back from there, I found it very difficult to... I didn't get that immediate sort of career trajectory and that immediate sense of fulfillment that I'd thought I would get, you know, go away for 2 years, do a really hard job working in private office down in the Ministry of Justice, which is really challenging work. And I didn't feel that I came back and sort of, I guess I felt a bit resentful, if I'm honest, that I hadn't got that boost that I sort of thought that might give me. Subsequently, I know that that experience was a big part of where I am now, but it didn't feel like it at the time. And I had to work through quite a few failed interviews and challenging times to sort of finally sort of find what I was all about and who I was and what was going to then get me to the next level. So that was really difficult. And again, I sort of thought, actually, do I want to do this? Am I banging my head against a brick wall here? What am I doing? I want to have more influence. I want to be more involved and have more impact. And I'm coming up against a brick wall, but eventually got through that. So yeah, a couple of professional times, and then obviously a very personal one there as well.
Mm. And my last question, which is all about impact, so you're going to love it, which is essentially, if you could do one thing to impact our communities, to make them happier and safer places, what one thing would you do?
Oh, God, that's a great question, Sarah. Blimey. One thing on the spot. So I think I would find a way of giving people and making sure people take the time to really listen to each other and not speak or listen in order to wait to give their own opinion, which is how many people listen. Yeah, when you're finished, I'm going to tell you how it really is, because that's what I think. But to really listen and to teach people the power of actually understanding someone's position, trying to put yourself in their place and not just polarize your opinion. And we see far too much of that. You know, this is my opinion and therefore it must be right. And that's never the case. I know I learn every day from amazing people. I try and surround myself with amazing people. You are one. but I genuinely try and because I want people to challenge me. I want them to challenge my preconceptions and prejudices and ways of thinking, because that's how you grow. You know, if you surround yourself with people with the same view as yourself, then you're never going to grow, because there's never going to be a challenge to that viewpoint. But to really appreciate that, yeah, what I would do is, you know, just try and get people to get back the art of just sitting and listening and listening to people who really understand and know what they're talking about as well. You know, yeah, of course you're entitled to your opinion, but you really don't know more about this than that guy. You might know more about that guy than something else, but on this subject, mate, that guy's, they've got something worth listening to. So you might want to just listen. Mm-hmm. And so I would love to see a bit more of that and a bit more respect for people who, you know, so that you actually do take the time to listen to people that really are worth listening. Everybody's got something to say, and most people will have something to say about stuff they probably know nothing about. So we should spend a bit more time listening and a bit more time respecting and understanding different people's viewpoints, but also recognizing that some people definitely know more about a lot of stuff than we do. So let's spend some time listening to them and use their experiences, knowledge and wisdom. We might not disagree, but we should definitely be listening to what they've got to say.
Lovely. Thank you so much, Ralph. And thank you for coming on Growth Uncut. And thank you for listening today. Catch you next time. Bye, Ralph.
Thanks, Sarah. Great to be here. Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening. And if you'd like to find out a little bit more about us, please check out our website on www.penalreformsolutions.com, or check us out on Instagram, LinkedIn, or Twitter or Facebook on Penal Reform Solutions. If you'd also like to contribute to help this podcast run, then please check out our Patreon account on www.patreon.com/growthmovement. Thanks so much and take care.